Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steve, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
Good. So I'm really glad to talk to you today because we just got to watch Dave Chappelle's 8:46. Calling it a special is the wrong word, but we got to watch that together. And anytime we can talk about comedy, you know I'm down with that. This really showed what a fucking genius Dave Chappelle is. I mean, first of all, there's people out there saying, "Well, what he said wasn't funny." He really wasn't doing a comedy special. He was talking about the times and talking about the killing of George Floyd and you know, the whole, you know, situation we're in right now with race in America. And he did it in a brilliant way. And he did something that I absolutely love, which is he called Laura Ingraham a cunt. And now, I didn't call Laura Ingraham a cunt. I just agreed with him when he did. So my mom can't get mad at me. And yeah. But anyway, I mean, fucking brilliant commentary. And it's kind of really interesting when the most articulate description of what we have going on in this country right now is coming from a comedian who's dropping C-bombs.
Well,
and it's better than anyone on the news.
Well, I mean, I think there's more to that than you probably, I don't know, are aware of what you're saying. I mean, the reality is that Dave Chappelle and people of his ilk that are being relatively objective and honest, they're the gatekeepers of kind of the time, right? That should be the responsibility of the media, but no matter what media outlet you go to, they're biased. They're driven by the dollar and clicks and whatever narrative they're trying to push, whether it's the Washington Post or the New York Times or Fox or MSNBC, whatever it might be. Like, they all have that kind of label. So even if they are putting out objective material, you have to dig through so much subjective crap to a degree that it's hard to trust them. And so I think Dave Chappelle and other people like him, and there's not really anyone like him, but he's filling a void in terms of who the gatekeepers are, or who the people are that are kind of recording what's happening and then putting it in perspective for people when they look back and see what's going on. And I think that I'm glad that he did this. I think it's important that he did it. It wasn't, like you said, it wasn't meant to be funny, but I do believe that you could feel the humor in it, but you could feel the realness and the sincerity. And when you go back and you look at what he's talking about in the history, like, you're going to be able to draw the connections that you need to make to figure out what the hell was going on.
You know, he said one thing that I thought was really, really interesting and important when he called out Don Lemon from CNN. And Don Lemon said, "Where are the celebrities in all this?" And he basically said, people who don't have a platform are out there making a point, out there protesting, out there being heard. We don't need a bunch of celebrities to come out there and lend their voice to this. This has the voice of the citizens, of people. And he basically said, "I'm doing the right thing by not trying to insert myself," and basically called out Don Lemon, which I know you're not the biggest Don Lemon fan.
I think it wasn't so much just Don Lemon. There were a lot, like, Don Lemon's not the only one. I think Don Lemon was kind of the voice or the face that he used. But, I mean, there are a lot of people who are, to a degree, there are people who are doing it disingenuously. Like, "Oh, where are all your celebrities now?" But I think it's a strong point that Dave Chappelle makes. There was a rap album that came out in the 90s, or actually in the early 2000s, called We Are the Streets. It's by The Lox, and they were with Bad Boy Records at the time, and Diddy and Biggie and all those guys. But the album was We Are the Streets, and I kept going back to that album as Dave Chappelle was talking, because that's what's happening. You're hearing the voice of the street rise up and say, listen, we're not taking this. And it's not just the death of George Floyd, right? Like people are saying, you know, it's not just the death of George Floyd, and it's not just the, it's just not the extrajudicial killing by police. It's not that. That's not the only thing. That is the last, that is the worst end result, right? That's the thing that is the worst that could happen, and nobody is happy with that. But the reality is there's so much more to it. There's so much more on the camel's back that is causing it to break than that last straw, which is George Floyd's death or any one of these extrajudicial killings that you're seeing by police. You know, it's the, you know, the predatorial way in which police go after people to ticket them for minor infractions, and those minor infractions lead to bigger and bigger altercations. It's the even once people get involved, like get tangled up in the system, it's the extra fines and the fees. And if you can't pay, then there's a warrant put out for your arrest, and then you go to jail, and then you can't get out. It's just the antagonistic way in which the police perform their job, with especially in urban communities, inner cities, black communities, lower income places, whether race doesn't matter, black, white, whatever. It's the way in which police treat those jobs on a consistent basis that creates this sentiment, this anger that you're seeing from the people who have to deal with it on a daily basis. And the reason why a guy like you or a person out in the suburbs can't necessarily relate to it, because the police don't treat you that way.
True.
You know, I mean, so well, that's and I think so when you've been treated that way for an extended period of time, and you see this ultimate end result of the George Floyd or pick a person who's been killed by police, that's where the hypersensitivity comes into, because the people who are arguing against that will say the numbers that exist don't justify this level of outrage, right? And then you point to it and you say, okay, well, there were only 9 unarmed black men that were killed. There were 18 or 36 unarmed white men that were killed. The police only kill 1,000 people a year, which is the number that people go to. And of those 1,000, only 230 were black, and there were more white. And it's not the number, right? Like, you're focused on the number, but again, you're talking about this is the end result, the possible worst thing that could happen. And yes, it's only happened 1,000 times, but that's still a lot of time for it to happen every year. And you're also completely discounting everything that leads up to that particular moment and that particular result.
I mean, that's the big thing, right? It's the day-to-day. Sure, this didn't end up in a death. It ended up with, you know, someone getting beaten up by the cops, someone getting thrown to the ground and whatever. And when it's something, you're right, it's something I don't, when I'm in walking down the street and a cop car passes me, or if I'm, you know, doing something that maybe I shouldn't be doing, but you know, I'm not constantly worried, like, if I get seen now, this is going to happen to me. And that is not the case for people of color. Just, there's a different level of fear, and justifiably so. One thing that I really want to say before it slips my mind, though, is Candace Owens did what she does, and she said basically, and Chappelle pointed this out, that trying to minimize the death of George Floyd, saying, well, he was a criminal, he had been in prison, blah, 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 that is irrelevant to the big picture. And so people trying to hide behind that card and say, well, you know, he was a bad guy. I frankly don't know anything about the man. He does have a record. I haven't verified any of it, but assuming what I've heard is true, I don't give a fuck. The fact is that they tortured the guy on the streets in broad daylight on camera without what seemed to be no fear of that action being criticized, much less prosecuted. And a bunch of people have said this, including Dave Chappelle, that some of them had their hands in their pockets. They were as casual as can be as they knelt on a man's neck, resulting in his death. And this can't be understated. He was non-responsive for like 2 minutes with Chauvin still on his neck. Yeah. Fucking disgusting and unforgivable. And so bringing up, well, he had a record. Fine, Candace Owens, you are right, and you are part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Well, I think that, I mean, the reality is, you know, I watched her video that she put out that, you know, people, you know, a lot of white conservatives are using a person like a Candace Owens or your recent discovery right. of the Hodge twins. And they're putting people like that out there because they're a buffer. They're using them as a proxy. Here's a black person saying all these things that I want to say, but if I say them, it's racist. And since I'm presenting it to you in the format of a black person saying it, then that's okay. And the reality is that that's not true. It's just as racist. You're still a racist asshole. You know, that person that you're using, it doesn't, like, what they're saying is racist, and just because they're black doesn't make it any less damaging. Right, like I'm not gonna say, oh well, it's coming from them, so it's okay, right? Like it's actually not. Like it's still just as, if not more, damaging because it now allows you to have this certain freedom to think that these things are okay or somehow true because of who's saying it. But the message is still what it is. And you know, Candace Owens really went to the fact that, you know, black people and people that are sympathetic to George Floyd, they're making him a martyr. First of all, that's not even the definition of a martyr. A martyr is someone who chooses,
right?
Who chooses to give their life for whatever the cause may be. They choose to step on that platform and give up and make this sacrifice. George Floyd didn't choose anything, right? George Floyd, trust me, I guarantee you, if they would have given George Floyd an option that day, do you want to live or do you want to become the catalyst for a movement that literally sets the world on fire, which would you prefer? I'm willing to bet that he would say, you know what, I'll choose to stay alive. We'll figure this out another way, right? Not to say that he was a coward or a bad
right,
man.
Right, no, but I understand.
The man had kids. He had a family. He had no choice. So he wasn't a martyr. He's a victim. He's an innocent victim. And his criminality has nothing to do with it, right? Because this is the United States of America, right? And in the United States of America, you are innocent until proven guilty, right? And if you commit a crime and you serve your time for that crime, there are limitations on the punishment for those crimes. None of the crimes that he committed, right, was the punishment equal to death, not one. And he had served his time, he had paid his dues, whether they were fines and fees or whatever, there were no warrants for his arrest. Right? So the idea that he was a criminal in his past had nothing to do with it. Oh, there were drugs in his system. Okay, were they drugged from that day? Does it matter? Right? I mean, like, it literally doesn't matter. And if there were drugs in his system, then saying that somehow he deserved to die because there were drugs in his system is insane. Right? And there's no one who could justify that.
Yeah, you mentioned the Hodge twins. I watched some of their videos yesterday. They popped up on my feed. And they were such caricatures of what would a right-wing nutbag want two black guys to say that I literally thought I was watching a parody.
I mean, there's, like, they're not the only ones.
No, Candace Owens.
You see, Candace Owens and the Hodge twins and Terrence K. Williams and Jesse Lee Peterson. There are dozens of these types out there, and they're not saying, they're all literally saying the same sorts of things. And what they do is they rely on the numbers when it comes to black criminality. Right, they focus on the numbers of black criminality. They focus on single mothers. They focus on abortion rates and those sort of things. Right, and they will tell you, they will spout those numbers out to you and say, "This is a black community's problem. It's not the police." Right, and what they ignore is the 150 years after slavery, after the end of the Civil War, after the Emancipation Proclamation, they completely ignore the 100 plus years that the U.S. government, that state governments, that local governments outright didn't deny, put in writing, right? Whether it was the FHA, whether it was the VA, whether it was a state government, a state Supreme Court, whether it was a local government, whether it was the Association of Realtors, whether it was pretty much every trade labor union out there, whether it was Ford or General Motors, all these different entities that openly said, we don't want black people living here, we don't want black people owning property, we don't want black people working here, we don't want black people learning here, right? And black people were shoved into the center of all these metropolitan cities, right? They were shoved into the center. And then what they said was, oh, by the way, we're going to allow in these places where you black people live, where you can't own homes, where you have to rent and live, you know, three families to a particular unit. Now we're going to allow for industrial places to come in and dump their waste. We're going to allow for the sale of liquor. We're going to allow for, you know, the strip clubs and bars, and we're going to allow all these things that we don't want to be in the suburbs where the white people live, right? So everything basically bad that we consider to be either a vice or dangerous for people to live around, we're going to zone by law, we're going to zone by ordinance it to be where you live. We're going to shove all that shit there. So, right, we're going to pollute you. We're going to surround you with alcohol. We're going to surround you with... we're going to make sure that we de-incentivize grocery stores for setting up shop close to you where you live. So we're going to take away the option for healthy food. We're going to make travel hard. We're going to put in barriers such as highways and walls, and we're going to put actual objects in your way from leaving, right? And then what we're going to do is that we're going to focus our policing on you directly. Right, because then what they did was after the civil rights, what happened? Nixon starts the war on drugs. Nixon starts it, then Reagan carries it over. And where do they focus the war on drugs? They didn't focus it in the suburbs. They didn't focus the drugs coming in. They focused it on the inner cities where they forced everybody to live. Right. So if you're not going to address any of that, and you're only going to go to the fucking numbers, right, then I can't fucking have a conversation with you when it comes to the issues that are directly impacting the black community, right? So don't give me any of those fucking numbers if you don't want to actually talk about what got us there, right? Because you got 100 years after they fought a fucking war to end the slavery, and then you said, you know what? Since we don't have slavery anymore, we're just gonna come out and all out assault you in every way fucking possible to strip you of your humanity and your right to be a citizen in this country. And then when all that gets overturned by law, then we just expect you to kind of just be all set to go. And when you're not, we're going to blame you for everything. Right. And I've been fighting this fucking fight on so many different fronts. I'm fucking exhausted. I have people coming at me, you know, people that say that they're my friends, people that aren't my friends, but just want to prove, like, and just telling me, oh, black on black crime, black on black crime, black on black crime. It's true. Look, this guy said it. This guy's black. He said it. It must be true. Right. I get it all the time. Text messages, emails, direct messages, Facebook Messenger, all this shit. People telling me that essentially black people are bad and everything that's bad that happens to black people is all 100% the fault of black people. So what the fuck are black people going to do about it? Right. That is what I get hit with every fucking day from some different person at a different angle about it every day. And it is fucking exhausting to carry that shit on my back every fucking day and still have to do my job and take care of my family. And then I have this conversation every fucking week. And, you know, when they said, when Dave Chappelle said, where is Dave Chappelle? I'm like, thank God you are here, because I needed to say it because I can't fucking do it anymore.
You know, I hear what you're saying. I got to ask you a question though, because I saw Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi wearing I'm going to put on a T for you. I called it an African scarf because I couldn't remember the name of it, and I knew if I spelled
it. It's not your job to know what a kente cloth is. I mean, a kente cloth is it's a piece of formal wear that Africans wear, I think specifically in Ghana. But yeah, I thought the whole thing with Pelosi and Schumer, and I thought that was just – it was such a spectacle, and it was all for show. It didn't help anything, right? You didn't make it. Go do your fucking job, right? Just go do your job. I don't need these displays, right? I'm tired of the white people falling on the sword, so-to-so, like with their, I'm sorry about white privilege. I'm sorry about racism. I'm so in your corner. If you're in my corner, just go do your fucking job, right? Like, I want to see shit change. I want ordinances changed. I want laws changed. I want legislation. I don't need your performance art at any level. I don't care if you're a little YouTuber or somebody on Instagram. I'm tired of the fucking posts. I'm tired of your little white rants. I'm tired of you out, you know, I'm tired of the signs, right? Like, it's all good and great, but now I need to see fucking action. I need legislation. I need rules changed. I need the game to change. That's what I need you to start fucking doing, right? Like, as much as the protests are important, now listen, they marched in Selma for 381 days, okay? They marched in Selma for 381 days, all right? So I'm okay with the protests continuing, right? Like, you got to get people so annoyed and so fed up that at some point they say, all right, fuck it, let's give them what they want, all right? So I'm fine with it. We're at that point. But for some of you who aren't out there marching and whatever, okay, now I need you to go fucking do something.
Just culturally admit, cultural acknowledgement. So there was that video that went out with a bunch of celebrities saying, I accept responsibility or something like that. Frankly, I have not seen it. I've had it described to me by multiple people. And I'm gonna throw myself out there as the white guy opening his big fat yap and let you do what you're going to do. But to me, that is, your intentions may be good, but I've never had a friend of mine who was black say to me, I want you to apologize for what you are. Never heard that once in my fucking life. I've had plenty of friends say, treat me like you would anyone else. And I'm not going to pat myself on the back or whatever, but I do everything I can to just, I treat people like people. If someone's a douchebag, they're a douchebag. If they're a good person, they're a good person. I give people the benefit of doubt as best I can to start. I've never insulted.
And I can back that up. You're a 100% stand-up guy. You're the same with everybody. I think you give cute bartenders a little too much leeway. But
and I will continue to do so because they're cute and they're serving me alcohol.
Right. But I would say you probably get, I would bet that you probably get more from male bartenders than you do from the floozies.
You're probably right. All right, I'm now doing a shot calculation.
There's a certain Irish pub in the whereabouts of Cam's Corner where I know for a fact there's nobody, man or woman, that pours like a certain dude who's got a twin brother.
Who might listen to our show, so we're not going to say his name, but he that guy takes good care of me because I'm a good patron.
Exactly.
It's getting a little personal, brother. But no, anyway, seriously though,
Doug, if you're listening, I miss you.
There we go. There we go. I was glad that you said it the way you did, because to me, Schumer and Pelosi came off as just disingenuous, front running phonies. And as much as I agree with everything you said about the Candace Owens and the Hodge twins of the world, I understand why that market exists, because Democrats claim to care so much about minorities and they genuinely speak about issues to minorities right up coming to an election. And then what?
And it's not, listen, I mean, and yes, that's
I'm
true.
Not saying Republicans are better.
that's politicians. But I mean, I can go, I can and I have, and you go back and you look at the various policies that were implemented that have been so destructive to not only just the black community, but people of lower income, right? Like, as much as what our government did was an attack on black people specifically, and it was, I mean, and when I say specifically, I mean, they literally had, they wrote things in policy that said to deter the infiltration of the Negro race, right? Like, I mean, like, you've got the FHA, the VA, like they had these things written into what they were passing as their official stance or their official policy, or, you know, you had states and local places that had this written out, right, to prevent the advancement of the Negro race into whatever. So as you go through history, though, Republicans, current day Republicans, or modern day Republicans love to tell you that, oh, the Democrats are the party of the Ku Klux Klan. The Democrats are the party that you know, have the most racist policies. But they conveniently forget the role that Republicans and Democrats both played in all this, right? Like, yeah, and they'll say, well, the Democrats had control of Congress during this time, and these particular laws were instituted. It's like, that's true. Democrats did have control, but Republicans voted unanimously to support whatever it was, Right? Like, I mean,
and
like,
the whole party of Lincoln thing is so insulting, right? It's like,
well, it is insulting, and it's just like, and people point to Abe Lincoln. Like, listen, Abe Lincoln knew that he had a riff in this country, and it was over slavery. And yeah, they thought it was bad for people, but the issue was you had slavery in the South. You didn't have it in the North. The South had an advantage over the North because they had free fucking labor, right? So when you mix the humanity of it and then you mix the economics of it, that's where the fucking rift comes from, right? Like, in Abe Lincoln, as much as he knew that slavery, like enslaving another person, was bad, he knew that the economics were the issue. Right. And ultimately, Abe Lincoln, after the war, basically wanted to take all the black people and either ship them off to Liberia or Panama, or he wanted to isolate them and have basically all of us take over a majority of the state of South Carolina. That was the way it was supposed to be. But then that ended up not happening. They assassinate him, and then, you know, Reconstruction basically gets blown the fuck up, and then you have segregation, Jim Crow, and the whole thing goes to shit, right? Like, right. I mean, like, so yeah, Abe Lincoln freed the slaves, but Abe Lincoln was not it's not like he was a fan of black people and you know, had us all in the White House after, like, yay, we're all friends. Like, he was pissed that we didn't want to leave, but we're like, where the fuck are we supposed to go? We've been here forever, you know, for a couple centuries now. Yeah. Right? Like, none of us have ever been to fucking Africa. We don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And the thing I love that Dave Chappelle does, which I talk about this all the fucking time, the shit wasn't that fucking long ago. Right? Right. Like, that's the part, like, it wasn't that fucking long ago, right? Like,
he said his,
like,
great-grandfather was born a slave.
Right. I mean, like, so, like, this is the fucking crazy thing that people just don't fucking get, is that this shit is not that long. Our country isn't that old, and we're still evolving. And from the outset, it's been a rocky start, and now we're starting a transition. And people think that transition can somehow be smooth, where everybody, like we can do it comfortably, and we're not going to be able to do it comfortably. I don't know what it means. I don't know if I don't think that it necessarily devolves into all-out war, but there are going to be some institutions that are going to have to be completely upended. Right, where people are going to lose jobs and completely be unemployable because of it, if we want to change it, because the foundations that some of these institutions were built on, their very core, exists because of the just all-out attack on a certain group of people in this country that you can't just cover up with Band-Aids and writing some new law into place that people didn't even try to adhere to for 20 fucking years, and then think that everything's going to be okay.
And you brought up Lincoln and that the economic drivers that caused him to take the stands he did. The economic drivers what we have right now, mostly speaking of the prison industrial complex, and I can bring up other things. There's, you know, other industries that benefit from status quo. Right, the prison industry, it is a fucking industry now, openly for profit by privately held companies. They have a greater voice than they should have. A, that whole concept shouldn't exist, but B, you know, they have a voice that is going to be heard in Washington more than people will be heard if nothing happens. And now things are happening, and I do want to do my rose-colored glasses for a second and say, this time things do feel different to me. Last week I took a picture of it and sent it to you and put it on our Facebook page, that there was a protest in basically the halfway point between your house and mine, and it was all white people, maybe 20 people, holding signs on a Saturday afternoon saying, among other things, you know, justice for George Floyd. But the one that sticks out, and I think it's a good one to talk about, is white silence equals violence. And that is what I'm hoping comes of this, is people who may not have a particular, you know, personal dog in the fight. Like you said, I can walk down the street and not worry about the shit that you have to walk around dealing with. The fact that young white people are saying, I'm recognizing this as a wrong, and I'm willing to put my face, put my name out there, and I'm feel bad. I think it's called the West Side Peaceful Protest page on Facebook. It is on. They are on our Facebook page. So if you want to, if you live in Cleveland and want to join them, look for them. You can find it on the Whiskey Congress Facebook page. You know, that is different than what's happened in previous events. You know, you mentioned that George Floyd isn't a martyr because he wasn't trying to be a martyr. He was not trying to represent a cause. You could argue that Martin Luther King was the definition of a martyr. No, he didn't want to get killed, but he literally knew his life was in danger all the time. And
yeah, he knew that day.
I Have a Dream speech before. Says, I don't think I'm going to be here very long.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm not, again, not trying to gloss things over in any way, shape, or form, but I do say this feels different to me. And whether it's because the whole world was, you know, in front of a TV or whatever, I don't know. But I really hope this, you know, maintains momentum. And I'm hopeful of that. And if that's insulting, I don't mean it to be. But I feel, okay. Because I know, like, nothing. I've pissed off many black friends, you among them, when I've said, look, this happy thing is happening. And you're like, yeah, fucking great. And talk to me in 2 weeks, because, and I'm not putting this all on you. I've had this conversation multiple times. But there's so often there's the desire by people like me, and I have done it, and I'll own that, to say, look at this positive thing, therefore things are happening, and to be met with the skepticism that I've now come to understand is completely reasonable, logical skepticism, is not only fair, but the frustration of you've dangled potential hope in front of me 100 times, and I know I'm pulling a number out there that's probably way undersell. You dangle hope out there like maybe this is getting better, and then this happens. And the systemic nature of it is I'm trying to put myself in your shoes, and I'll acknowledge I cannot. You used the word exhausting multiple times, and I can only imagine how exhausting it is.
Well, you can't, like, and the thing is, you don't necessarily need to put yourself in my shoes to try to visualize it through my eyes, but you just have to think that, I guess, you know, as it pertains to the police, right? You have you have thousands of interactions with the police on a daily basis that don't end in violence, that don't end in death, that are innocuous.
Right.
You know, and so again, when you talk about the numbers, then from a number standpoint, not that big of a deal. But the issue is when you drill down to certain areas, right? When you remove the rest of the country and you look at and you focus on the urban areas and you focus on the places where that are predominantly low income and black, and you see what happens, then those numbers shift dramatically, where the interactions are hostile on a consistent basis and there is a greater chance for violence. But much of this has to do with the antagonistic nature in which the cops deal with these particular people, right? And people say, well, it's the people's fault because, you know, they're not, you know, they don't have dads in the homes and they're disrespectful. And yes, and all of that comes from lived experiences, generations of bad experiences with the police treating people unjustly. And over time, that attitude permeates and it creates this us versus them that now it's almost impossible to undo without massive change. And so right now, this movement that we're all a part of, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, it is different. It feels even bigger and different than what happened, you know, 5-6 years ago with Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown, because now it's not just the group Black Lives Matter screaming Black Lives Matter and then being told to shut up by all these various other institutions and groups and everyone just kind of saying like, yeah, well, you know, the phrasing isn't the best. And if you did this and like I was guilty of it and, you know, I still stand by it that, you know, again, my whole end result is winning, right? Like you want something, you want to get it. So you have to take the best path to get there. So, you know, the name Black Lives Matter, if you're looking at it from how can we advance our position, is going to be considered to be problematic. But at some point in time, you say, fuck it, we're going to win no matter what. So either you're on the train or off the train. So now I have to make the decision. Am I on or am I off? And am I going to say I'm off because I don't like the phrasing? Well, fuck that. I can't say I'm off because I don't like the phrasing, because this shit is life or death in some instances. So fuck it. We'll get on. We're past the name. We keep moving. And what you're seeing is so many other people who are doing that. They're saying, all right, fuck the name. It's everything. Like, everything that they're saying is true, and it matters that it's not Black Lives Matter more than anything else. It's that these Black Lives Matter as well, and right now they're the ones that are seemingly under attack. They're the ones who are bearing the brunt of this nation's kind of worst sort of sin, right? Like, sure. Still to this day. And so they're the ones who need the help right now. And the other part that I try to tell people is, like, look, the police in inner cities focus their energy on the inner cities because that's what they're trying to do. But how hard would it be for any one of these little suburban towns to get basically taken over and run over by their police force, right? If the police just all of a sudden started to behave in Bay Village or Avon Lake like they did in Cleveland, right? Like, they're already armed to the teeth, right? Like, they all, like, I saw North Olmsted driving down the street one day. North Olmsted is a suburb out here. And they have a fucking armored tank thing. Like, it's not a tank. It's like a...
No, it's an armored personal carrier, but yes.
Right. Like, I mean, they have one of those things. And it's just like, what the fuck do you need that for in North Olmsted? Like, and I'm sure Bay Village has one, and Avon Lake and all these other places. Like, what the fuck do they need those for? And why do you need... Like, we're all in right in the same area. So why would you need one so close together?
Right.
It just... And I guess my point is that, listen, like, bad policing can happen anywhere, right? And you give them a badge, you give them a gun, you give them the ability to take away freedom, you give them the ability to take away life. They're the ones who determine how that is justified, right? The police are the ones who determine how they, like, if they take away a life, they are the beginning and the end of the justification of that life. Very rarely does it get analyzed by a third party, well, right?
Yep. And we talked about the Hodge twins. One of their bullshit arguments was,
Jim, I'm sorry, stop with the Hodge twins.
Well, I want to point. I wanna,
no,
oh,
Jim,
hold on.
Jim,
let me,
I'm sorry. They're fucking idiots, man.
I agree.
They're
okay,
idiots, but, and then allowing them to take up space.
Okay.
When I'm actually trying to make a valid point, and they're two uneducated fucking morons who were trying to make it as YouTubers in fitness and bodybuilding and couldn't do it because they're too fucking stupid. You're now going to interrupt me when I'm trying to make a fucking point, when I'm trying to actually do something of value instead of being a fucking asshole with those two? Come the fuck on. You're missing the entire point if you're going to continue to bring those dipshits into the fucking conversation.
I will not bring them up again, but the bigger point was that they brought up the killing in Arizona, where the guy got shot in the hotel room, and it was a white cop shooting a white guy. It was a brutal display of police brutality. That was it. Watching it, it's as disgusting as any.
And we talked about
right.
That killing on this show.
Yes,
and we watched it. And the thing about that was that, like, one, the cop who actually ended up killing the kid, he had a phrase written on the side of his gun that said, "You know, you're fucked."
Right.
Right? Like, if you see this, you're fucked. And you take with it, like, when you watch the video, this kid is scared out of his mind. He's in basketball shorts and a t-shirt. They've got him on his knees with his legs crossed and his hands up in the air. And then they tell him to put his hands behind his head. And, you know, they tell him to lay down, and they're screaming at him, crawling. There's I don't know, you can't tell how many cops are jammed in this hallway. And the kid makes one false move, and the cop shoots him, right? I mean, and the kid was white, and they were called because the kid was doing something. I don't suggest taking if you take a gun into your room or whatever and aiming it out of the window of a hotel shortly after a massacre happens in Vegas, right?
Right.
But even still, there were ways that could have been handled and cleared up without an entire SWAT team and without that kid ending up dead. And I can make the argument that a group like a Black Lives Matter or any activist that's saying that, listen, police brutality is out of control, I think you look to that and you point to that specific event and you say, look, it's not just happening to black people. It's happening to white people. If it could happen to If it could happen to George Floyd, it could happen to this guy in Arizona. And if it could happen to those two, it could happen to me and it could happen to you. Right. And you can't continue to make excuses and justify bad police behavior by saying, well, the person had a criminal past, or if this guy hadn't been doing this one stupid thing, then the police wouldn't have, like, you can't continue to do that. There's never going to be a perfect victim. And if you're waiting for a perfect victim, you're going to get a lot of people killed before you get there.
And that was my point, that just because it happened to a white guy doesn't mean the issue that we've been discussing isn't valid. Like, well, look, a white guy got murdered by the police too, so therefore what we're talking about is not a valid issue. That's a bullshit argument. It's a chicken shit argument, and I just wanted to call that out.
Right, and I think,
and I've been dealing with that on Facebook a lot lately.
Right, and so people are going to, you know, well, you know, it's not being covered by the media, so therefore, listen, if we're not seeing it, then it's hard to call something out, right? Like, I can't spend my time scouring all the local news across the country looking for white people being killed by police, right? Like, I'm not doing it, but I'm also not doing that looking for black people being killed by police. And you're right, and they're right to a degree that the media focuses on black and white extrajudicial killings because of the amount of attention that it provides, right? But at the same time, should they be doing it when it happens to white people? Absolutely. But
right.
The public response is part of the problem, right? It's just that you don't see the same sort of energy because, listen, a black person gets killed, multiple black people rise up, like Dave Chappelle said, because we see ourselves, so we see one of us going down, so we raise up, right? He talked about Chris Dorner, right? And why did all the cops show up? Like, all right, and this happens, and it's not just with Dorner, but anytime a cop gets shot, right? If a cop gets killed, they call off-duty cops and they come in and swarm, no problem, and they are ready to go to defend themselves, to defend the thin blue line. So white people, if you see a cop kill one of your own, your response shouldn't be making excuses as to a reason why he maybe probably should have deserved it. Instead, you should be like, why the fuck is this happening? That could be me. That could be my son. That could be my daughter. That could be my wife or husband. Why are we okay with the police just extrajudicially killing people and then saying, well, chances are I hope that they deserved it in some way, shape, or form?
Well, another thing Chappelle brought up that we've talked about extensively is Philando Castile, also murdered by the, also killed by the police, also in Minneapolis. And he was a legal registered gun owner who was trying to show I'm a legal gun owner. Where was the fucking NRA? I know a few NRA people did stand up for him, but he... You say, you know, it could happen to you, it could happen to me. I'm a concealed carry holder. It's entirely possible that I would have a firearm in my truck. And again, this is whether white privilege is the right word for it. But if I'm in my car or truck and I tell an officer I'm a concealed carry holder, which I'm legally required to do, and there's a gun in here, I'm not thinking I'm about to get shot. We saw on video, plain as day, Philando Castile, I am a legal gun owner. Here, I'll show you my permit. Bang. And
the problem is the reason why that cop got off is because of what the standard is, right?
I was afraid.
No, well, yes, afraid. And you know what would an office what would a officer acting another police officer acting reasonably in that situation do? And that's the basic standard, right? And it's just like, well, I determined that I was afraid for my life, and I determined that this was, you know, a highly risky situation, so therefore it made sense for me to not only put my hand on my gun, but, you know, pull it and pull the trigger, because I was afraid, right? And when we talked to Mike Wood, one of the things he said is that standard is what needs to change, right?
Like, is it called implied immunity? What, there's a term for it.
What's that?
There's a term for it. It's like implied immunity or something.
Yeah.
Where it was like, because you're doing the job justifies you and removes your responsibility as an individual, which is
right.
Bullshit.
I mean, and getting rid of that is something that needs to happen, but it can only come from Congress. Like, the Supreme Court has already said, listen, as it stands, it's fine. You know, I mean, so the Supreme Court lets you down there. And so that's where Congress has to step in and say, actually, no, it's not okay. And they need to change it, right? And that standard and figuring out what that standard is what needs to happen. Now, the police are going to fight it, but of course the police are going to fight it because the police have been allowed to police themselves for so long, and anyone in their situation would fight it the same exact way, right? It doesn't matter that they don't give a shit at this point about people being killed unfairly or whatever. They have the power. They don't want to give that up. They will tell you that only police can police, but that's fucking insane, right? It has nothing to do with the difficulty of their job. It's just that if you give anyone the freedom to police themselves, make their own rules, then they're going to take it as far as they possibly can. And then when you try to take that power away from them, then they're going to fight a tooth and nail. And that's what we have with the police right now. Right, like they don't want standards to change, and they don't like they'll give a little bit, right? And they'll say, okay, fine, we'll wear body cameras that we can turn on and off at our own leisure.
Right. I mean, I've said this jokingly, but I mean it 100% sincerely. Is, you know, people say, wouldn't it be great if it was like it was in the good old days? I'm like, well, for me, yes. For a 40-something white guy, if I could be a sexist, misogynist, racist douchebag with impunity, then walk into my office and open a bottle of bourbon and get shit-faced behind my desk, would that personally be fun for me? Yeah, it's fucking wrong. But it's, you know, yeah. If I'm not me, it sucks. Would it be great for me? Sure. But as a rational, honest human being, I'm going to sit here and say, it was shitty. The fact that it was acceptable in 1952 or 1852 does not mean it was right then. It was just accepted, and we need to change societal standards. And things that are going right now, things that are going on right now, feel like they're at least making an attempt to change those societal standards. And I'm happy to see it. And
yeah, I mean, and there are things that, like, some things are being done, right? Like, we are seeing some changes being made. Congress did introduce a bill. We'll see if that bill has legs. Because I think there are Republicans out there that are shifting, on the topic of police reform. They're shifting on some of these conversations around race. But I think one of the bigger issues in reality, and this is for everybody, including myself, it's not like there's just a clear solution. And one obvious thing that you can do that fixes any one of these issues that we talked about, or that resolves it and easily puts it on the right path, right? Like there's not some easy solution. And I think that's part of the fear on a lot of people's part on jumping in, is that because this is not just some easy equation, that the fear is if you get it wrong, the blowback, right? I mean, because people have tried things in the past that haven't worked, that have ended up having a disparate impact, that have impacted people's lives negatively. And the crime bill is a perfect example, right?
Right.
I don't think the crime bill initially was meant to be racist, but the impact of the crime bill would definitely had a racial impact that hurt people who looked like me. I watched it live and in person and in color in Youngstown, Ohio. They militarized the police, and the police had free rein to go after anybody who they thought had an inkling of buying and selling drugs. And they came in full force. The police went from kind of, you know, Andy Griffith, howdy doody cops to fucking SEAL Team 6. Like, I watched the transition happen. They, you know, raids, kicking in doors. The guns got bigger. The cops got bigger. It was like they were playing. They went from playing like stupid 80s rock to fucking death metal, and that was the police force. And I watched it happen. I mean, I got the shit kicked out of me. One night we were having a party at my friend's garage, and everything was legal. They owned the land. They had an open parking lot next to his house, where we live, which is hard to explain because it was kind of like, it's kind of industrial, and the building next to theirs was an old, I don't know what it was, but old small little textile place. And it had a back parking lot, but they owned it. So he threw a party in his garage, in his house, and we're all in that parking lot. The police came by, wanted to know what we were doing. And I literally just said, we're just having a party, having a good time. And that cop grabbed me by my neck, turned me around, slammed me on the back of a car, broke my glasses, handcuffed me, threw me on the back of the car until my friend's dad came out and asked what was going on. And my friend was white. His dad came out and asked what the hell was going on. The police questioned him, and then they were about to drive off with me, and he got my friend's dad got me out of the car and, you know, went to the police and said, what did he do? Like, he didn't do anything. This kid never does anything. He's, you know, and he starts going through my resume, and, you know, the cop just said he got mouthy. And so they end up letting me out and taking the handcuffs off me, but now my night is beyond ruin. I'm scared. You know, I mean, I was 15 years old. I was scared. My glasses are broken, right? I'm blind as a bat without them. I literally had a bruise on my face from where he bounced my face off the trunk of the car, right? Like a bat, like, bam, slammed my head down, right? And I'm just like, okay, well, I mean, and immediately, like, and all my friends are terrified and scared. They don't know what to do. I mean, we were 15.
Right.
You know, I mean, and this was, the police concern, to their credit, I guess, was you got all these kids, the potential is drug, gang activity, whatever, so they handle it as such, right? And the crime bill opened up their free reign to treat everybody like a suspect.
Right.
You know, I mean, it made a bad situation worse, right? And how were we supposed to deal with that? I don't know. We didn't deal with it right that time. You know, should we have treated the drug epidemic more like a health crisis? Yes, it should have been treated like a health. And how we do that, I don't fucking know, right? But you figured it out for opioids and meth and pills, right? It seems to be working out okay for them. So maybe we should have done that in the 80s. So how do we deal with it now? I don't know, but it's got to be a more empathetic approach to what we did in the 90s.
And if I can put a comparative story out there, when I was 16 or 17, I was driving two of my friends in my family station wagon, and we got pulled over because our vehicle resembled something that was used in a crime. And 2 minutes later, we were back to driving down the street because we were three goofy kids, and it just ended there. Nothing physical, nothing whatever. And we were supposedly in a vehicle that had been used in a crime. So you were at a party and said, what's wrong? And that's anecdotal. I won't try to make sense.
Yeah, that, I mean, but I'm not saying that my experience is the end all be all.
No,
but that was just my experience watching it. And what I'll argue is that it sucks that my glasses were broken. It sucks that, you know, I was scared. But based off of the parameters that were set, you know, by the laws that were put in place, like, they were doing what they were supposed to do.
Well, right? My point is, my incident didn't make me fearful and whatever, and yours did because you got your face bashed and your glasses broken. I got told, your car looks like something we're suspicious of. Oh, it's not you. Have a good day.
No.
So why would – I mean, I don't harbor any – and so, you know, you're now – almost 40.
Not yet.
Almost 40. Months. Almost 40.
I'm actually excited. I'm actually excited.
No, you're not.
I am, because when I turn 40, I got friends who do photo shoots and everything, and I'm going to do
sexiest man over 40. Is that what you're going for?
I'm
going
to do a little photo shoot, just to say this is me at 40. And so if you have pictures of yourself at 40 that you would like to compare at this point in time,
Look at your tough guy.
I'm not challenging you to a fight.
I think you technically, no, you didn't challenge me to a fight. You challenged me to a photo shoot, whatever. I went Zoolander on you.
You
did go Zoolander on me. And what's the fucking song? Relax, we're not talking about that. I'm not telling you to relax. Actually, there's something I really want to talk about before we call this a day. Because NASCAR has banned the Confederate flag. And some people are losing their damn minds. And I find this awesome. For one thing, we've talked about the Confederate flag multiple times. And how hypocritical it is for people to say, I'm an American. Here's my Confederate flag. Okay, so you're now flying the flag of the people who were taking up arms to end America. And you see no hypocrisy here. Colin Kaepernick kneels down during the national anthem. He's disrespecting the flag. You are literally flying a flag that said, fuck you to the United States, and you don't see the irony. And I just can't help but bring that up.
Well, you know what's crazy is that I was scrolling through you know, some comments and replies on, I can't remember if it was Facebook or Instagram, but and it had to have been Instagram because there was a person from Germany who was commenting on somebody that was complaining about the Confederate flag being taken down, right, in erasing history. And a person from Germany is making the point that, so pretty, I love the dress. All right, but go, I'm busy, obviously. Close the door behind you.
Her weekly appearance, Steve's daughter.
So, the German guy literally, and I've said this in the past, but, you know, the German guy was, look, you know, Hitler was defeated, and in Germany, we not only don't fly the flag, but, you know, any Nazi paraphernalia is banned. It's illegal.
It's a criminal offense, yeah.
Right? And no one in Germany has forgotten what happened. No one in Germany has whitewashed history. They don't talk about it. It's offensive to them and embarrassing that it happened at all. And it's deeply ingrained in their minds as to what it is. Like all their kids, like all the kids know, and all the, you know, I mean, and listen, World War II was even more recent than the Civil War. So it's, you know, it's a little bit different of a situation, but I mean, their point is that, listen, the Nazis lost. We don't fly their flag. We don't put up statues of, you know, Hitler's generals all around.
Rommel.
The same.
There's no Rommel statue.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, they don't put up statues of the SS generals and name schools after them and say, like, yeah, they lost, but they were still good Germans. No, they were sinister and diabolical, and so they burned the whole fucking thing. The Confederacy is not that much different. They were all fighting in the name of, you know, keeping the right to keep slaves, right? And then people will say, well, black slaves fought in the Confederacy because they had to. They were forced to do so at gunpoint, and many, when they could, fucking cut and run.
Yeah. No, and that's a big part of it. That, again, we've had this conversation before, but the idea that, well, it's not about slavery, it's about states' rights. Oh, really? A state's right to do what? Well, have slavery, but in a broader picture, there's other things. We'd also
it was literally the only thing, right? Like, there was the only thing that the South could do that the North couldn't, that they were fighting over. Right, I mean, like, so you could say,
and specifically
rights,
why they left, including their president saying it.
Yes, I mean, the president said no more slaves, and they said we can do whatever we want. We want to have slaves, and so they fought a war over it. How it's not about slavery is fucking ridiculous.
And so, anyway, I'm glad to see that NASCAR took a stand. Now, I will say that this is actually not that new. It's been a couple of years where NASCAR started saying, you turn in a Confederate flag, we'll give you an American flag. And that's a perfect example of one of those meaningless gestures that people want to pat themselves on the back and say, oh, good, look at us. But the flip side of that is they've been saying for a long time, like, look, we got to stop this shit. Has their fan base been doing that? Not so much that I've noticed. Now, I watch as much NASCAR as... your daughter.
I'm not a huge NASCAR fan, but I mean, like, listen, they were dealing with the situation the best they could, right? I mean, it's their entire, like, their fan base. I won't say their entire fan base, but a huge portion of their fan base and people in their organization support Confederate flags, right? Like, right. So they're trying to remove something that can directly impact their bottom line. So we live in a capitalist society in the United States, so they have to walk delicately. They can come down with a hammer, but at the same time, if you lose your business over it, then okay, you've taken a stand, congratulations, but now what do you do? And, you know, I mean, like, in the perfect example of that is a man named Ray Ciccarelli.
Here we go.
Okay, Ray Ciccarelli took a stand, but it wasn't against the Confederate flag. It was actually in support of the Confederate flag. Ray Ciccarelli is a 50-year-old driver in the truck series of NASCAR. So you have the Nextel Cup,
The Bush series is the lower one.
Right. Like, so you have the Nextel Cup, which is the big series, right? Where, you know, right. Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Jeff Gordon and Rusty Wallace and all those people. And I know there's newer people, but I don't follow NASCAR.
Right.
Then you have the Bush series, right? Which is the lower level. That's like kind of like the minor leagues, you know, triple A ball or whatever. And then you have the Truck series, which is like kind of like the entry level in a NASCAR. Ray Ciccarelli, for I believe his career spans
he's 50 years old,
he's 50 years old. He's been in the Truck series for 4 years with 18 races, and he's got 0 wins and 1 top 10 finish in the Truck series. But he said that he was retiring from NASCAR after their decision because, you know, he doesn't believe that they should bend a knee to the mob and that they should do what they believe is right. And he believes that if they want to fly the Confederate flag, they should be able to. So he is retiring. He is taking his ball and going home.
So essentially a guy batting 185 for the Toledo Mud Hens, who's a backup infielder, is taking a stand. Thank you, Ray Ciccarelli. You are a hero. Actually, you're a fucking douchebag.
Right. I mean, it's just like, I
and by the way, you got mad at me about the fucking Hodge twins. Why are we giving Ray Ciccarelli oxygen?
Exactly. See how that feels?
All right, man. Should we shut it down on that?
Well, I do want to bring up one other thing.
Go ahead.
So you brought up a situation that you were involved in where, you know, you were at a bar and, you know, a black guy came in and you know, he had food. It was a bar that doesn't serve food and which they allow people to bring food in. And, he asked for the utensils and, you know, someone made a pretty racial remark.
He asked for salt and pepper. Yeah, he asked for.
Yeah. And. You know, some remarks were made and you told me the story and, you know, it was interesting on its face, but the part that gets me is that you told me the whole fucking story to get to the part where the aggrieved black guy tells you that you look like Bruce Willis.
Yes, he did say that.
Right? You tell me this story.
I bought him a shot before he said it. Full disclosure.
Okay. All right, but all of that, right, to get to the part where he tells you that you look like Bruce Willis.
Yes. I'm failing to see the problem here.
It's not a problem.
The problem is, I've been given the Rob Corddry, you look like Rob Corddry thing a few times in my life, and yeah, I'm a bald white guy.
Jim, you can't help who you look like.
I don't look like Rob Corddry.
Okay.
I mean, no offense, Rob Corddry. Here's an economic thing. Every time someone says to me, "You look like Rob Corddry," and I'm like, "Fuck you." They're like, "What? He's rich." You don't say I look like Rob Corddry because of my wallet, you bitch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, right, I've gotten.
So are you claiming that I stood up for this man simply because he told me I look like Bruce Willis? Because I did not.
No,
it was a plus.
You stood up for him and before you bought that, a shot before he told you you look like Bruce Willis.
Yes.
I'm not saying that you are. No, that is not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I just want to point out to our listeners that
you sat through the story. You feel like I wasted your time to set this up.
This story,
okay.
Right. For you to tell me that someone gave you, I guess, a compliment that you look like Bruce Willis.
And my response to that is, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Man, I gotta go. I need to smoke some meat. I need you to comment on my personal Instagram, too, to kind of boost this thing up so I win this ridiculous smoker.
Okay, that I will do. That I will do. Right. All right, so my beef with you is you want this ridiculous. You already have an amazing amount of ability to smoke meat, and you do it very, very well, and I appreciate it. And now you're like,
now I just want to do more.
Okay. When you were doing this shit, I did not know it was to win a contest. Mm-hmm. I take back what I said to you. So now
we're airing some laundry.
We're airing some laundry.
For anyone listening,
I look like Bruce Willis.
Jim looks like Bruce Willis, according to an aggrieved guy at a
and
bar
my mom
that he bought and your mom.
My mom thinks
and your mom
and my mom.
Okay, well, my mom thinks I look like LL Cool J, so
you look
take
like
that
Shug
for
Knight.
What it's worth.
You do look like Shug Knight.
Yeah, I do. That one's hard to deny.
All right. I love how this went from a serious... This is why I love doing shows with you. We went from actually having legitimate social commentary conversations to get me a bigger smoker so I can smoke more meat and what celebrities do we look like, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on the Rob Corddry versus Bruce Willis angle.
If you want to join a real motherfucking record label, you come to Death Row right motherfucking right now.
I can't figure out how that led to trouble. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to specifically tweet at me, it's Jim_WhiskeyKong on Twitter. If you use the regular Whiskey Congress thing, you'll most likely be hearing from Steve. I am Jim@WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email me. Steve@WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to email him. Thank you for listening. I look like Bruce Willis, and we're out of here.